We now have time for about 20 minutes for questions, but I actually will take the chair's prerogative and follow up with Patrick on a question, which is, one of the ideas or themes of this session is to try to get a better handle on the issues, but also the mechanisms, the barriers, and the opportunities for building more coherence into global science. You mentioned with a lot of statistics, a lot of the issues around Europe and where Europe is an experiment, well, the United States is not an experiment. What do you see from the experiences of Europe that maybe give us a little bit more of a knowledge base for how we even deal with what Arimoto raised in his piece of the system of systems? Are we even there yet? Are we still so regionally trying to figure things out that this idea of international coherence is actually not even something that we can think about? And I think you have a, can I give you a microphone?
Lessons from Europe is that it's still an experiment, still in evolution. In my opinion, it's moving in the right direction. I do think we need more concentration of effort in Europe, more pooling of resources for some of the major issues that face us in society. There's probably, and we don't have good documentation on this, but there's probably a good deal of duplication and, in fact, even wasted effort because every country has its own complete set of R&D. Some good, some bad, but a good deal of duplication. And these huge challenges are essentially the energy one, which of course feeds into the climate one, and the second one then is, and there are many of them, but the second one is health management in society. And these are challenges, particularly on the energy one, I think, that require a concentration of firepower greater than we've had in Europe. So I think we've something to learn from the United States there. In my opinion, the United States is too concentrated in two respects, one on the non-civil and the second on everything coming down through Washington. And I think here in Europe, we're too dispersed. So perhaps there is a convergence going on there, and the next cycle of investment in the European Union, of course, is going to be a shift in my opinion, the right direction. 7% of public R&D in Europe now comes through Brussels, and that's to increase in the next cycle by about 60%. So we'll move well above the 10% level. But I don't think we'll ever, at least in a lifetime or two, come near to the American model.
Questions in the audience? If not, do you want to? Anyone I want to add to this? If there are microphones here.
I would just make one point. I think Dr. Arimoto made a very important point about whether we have mechanisms that can cut across sort of government policies across the globe in order to help us in this process of working together as a global community. And I don't know if you have a agency or an entity that you would propose, maybe JST.
Grover Research Council, something like that. Anyways, everybody facing the same difficulties because the funding programs, supported by the money, tax, based upon the concept of the nation-state systems. So every funding system, say Japan and the National Science Foundation, we cannot transfer real money to the other countries. Of course, the EU is a transnational systems, so they can do. Anyway, based upon such difficulties, we need much money, much power, not only the scientific communities, but also the political powers, etc. Yeah, thank you so much.
One question and then two here. So why don't we start with Linda and then Professor Lee.
Linda Staley with CRDF Global. I want to commend you, Vaughn, for pulling together a wonderful panel. I've thought a lot about international models for science collaboration over the last 20 years working in this area, and one of the models that I've always liked is the Human Genome Project, and I've talked to you about it, Vaughn, but This is where scientists came together. It was very much bottom-up, led by the U.S. and the U.K. And many other countries working together with some funding, with a very discreet focus and goal. And so as we think about the global challenges, such as energy and water and health, many sub-areas, I just wonder if we can think about sort of what are the most effective and efficient ways to engage the scientists without a lot of bureaucracy to really zero in on these issues. And I just put that up as a question, and I've always been enamored with that particular model, and because it very much is scientist-driven. So I'd like your thoughts on that.
Thank you. You've added now the other alliteration, effective and efficient to compatible and coherent. Professor Lee, I think you had a question. We'll just take three questions and then go.
Hi.
I think we are facing great difficulties. And very often when we discuss international collaboration or global collaboration, we have to start with the nation-based mechanism. And as Dr. Arimoto mentioned, when the Human Genome Frontier Program was established, and you also mentioned, that was thought to be one of the global science foundation or global science activities. I do believe if we want to have the global problem solved, we do need global scientific institution, more and more global scientific institution. It means that every country should be prepared to invest some money in the global funding mechanism. It has to go beyond national-based collaboration. We really need to have more global science institutions. So maybe one of those institutions could be global sustainability research organization and get all the best minds from the world. And without political restriction, we might think about how should we do if you take entire Earth as a home. And so I do believe establishment of more global scientific institutions would be the way to go. Thank you.
Why don't we take one more question, which I think you had a question, and we'll see these all together.
It's Martha Richter from the Natural History Museum in London. I am a big advocate of museums and cultural centers as organizations that can actually provide a huge platform for scientific dissemination of knowledge. And I wonder, I was very inspired by your talk, Mr. Rock. I wonder, how could we improve worldwide the collaboration between these centers, you know, for dissemination of knowledge? And should we have lines of funding for activities, let's say, that could go across, you know, boundaries to encourage the center to deal with global issues, you know, because every museum have their own mission, etc., and sometimes they concentrate on their own mission. That's all right, but perhaps they could be used as platform for discussion of the big issues.
Thank you.
And the big elephants in the rooms as well. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, this is, I think, a good sort of triad to start the answers with, or start the answers with. And I don't know if anybody wants to take this question of the role of bottom-up science as a way to sort of promote some of these more coherent structures, especially around things like the Human Genome Project. There are others as well. Then I think Professor Lee has pointed out, and I think this actually came up a couple of years ago as well, this question of do you need something like a global science foundation or some sort of a mechanism even more sectorally based to deal with these issues? And then I think there's one question very specifically for Bud, which is, again, a funding issue, but one that I think comes up in this conversation. Does anyone want to start with answering? Alan, why don't you?
So I have one concern. I may or may not.
No. Yes. I
The one concern I have, I love Professor Lee's idea of having some kind of global science council, global science foundation. I think the problem is that we have learned that the people who contribute to that global fund always want to vote about what's going to happen in it. And once that happens, then it seems to somewhat fall apart. Either they want to have a vote in how the money's going to be spent, or they have their own reporting requirements that make the administration of such an activity almost unmanageable. So I think the concept is a wonderful concept, but every example of attempts to do it has been met with bureaucracy that is just unmanageable. So I think if we can have some kind of fundamental change in the nature of humans, it'll help.
Why don't we go with it? Does anyone want to answer the second or the first issue, which is this question of the human genome, or any of them? I mean, and then Bud, obviously, the last one is for directly for you. So, Patrick.
On the issue of global organizations, of course, we already do have everything from World Health Organization to FAO, and indeed in the science area, you have the within the agricultural research, you have the CGIAR system. So we do have in embryo sectoral organizations of this kind, and as Alan said, they are difficult organizations to make effective, simply because there are so many different objectives of the various people who contribute to them and eventually control them. So rather than leaping to a new global science foundation, it seems to me that we should try to continuously improve the functioning of these ones which we do have and build out from those. Secondly, the question of museums and exchanges and making the flow of information, in a sense, and cooperation better. It seems to me the place to put the investment there is in people. And we have, for example, in the European Union, the Marie Curie program, in which thousands of young scientists move around Europe. And that is one of the best investments I think we're making for the future. And I think that, and there are, of course, international versions of the same thing. And I think if we're to spend money on trying to increase knowledge and the transfer of knowledge, I think we should put it there.
Do you want to answer that last one, then we'll go on to the...
thank you very much for raising the question. Science centers and museums around the world reach about 200 million visitors per year. This is an extraordinary opportunity for engaging the public on these kinds of issues. And we have long since passed the period where visitors or the public involved in these kinds of activities expect to be instructed by the scientists. They want to engage the science community on all of these issues, which, by the way, presents a certain challenge for these centers to remain current and to be engaged both with the scientist as well as with the public. I think that we have a funding issue? We certainly do. We always would like to have more resources applied to helping the public engage in science-related issues. But we also have a bit of a philosophical issue here as well, in the notion that it's sometimes difficult for the scientist to communicate effectively in that environment, and we become the interpreters of that information. We want to see different elements of the public more visible in the debate. We want to see more women in science. We want to see more underserved communities in science. We want to see them not just scientists, but engaged in the dialogues about scientists, which requires a certain effort on the part of the science community to be willing to be more engaged in these environments as well. So it is both a philosophical as well as a funding issue. And I think my final point, and I referred to it briefly in my comments here, is that when we look at our government-to-government collaborations, I mean, the fact is that many of the agencies that join in those science collaborations are fundamentally not the national science foundations and equivalent organizations around the world. They tend to be mission-driven service organizations to their own societies. They're providing a domestic service that happens to be science-based. There's not always a one-to-one fit in those relationships in our international collaborations. But science education and public engagement in science is a common theme across all of those domains. And that's where science museums and centers of that sort can be tremendously effective, working collaboratively with their governments.
Okay. Recognizing that we're very close to time, we've got, I think, three questions left. So please, questions, not comments. We'll start in the front, then Stefan second, and I think a third question over here. So please, you.
I am Adel Biltegi. I am from Egypt, and I chair the International Dryland Development Commission, as well as the Center for the Mediterranean Research in Agronomy, which consists of four institutions. Anyhow, I would like just to go back to the proposal of Professor Lee and the comments made with Professor Cunningham. The issue here is that if we have a model which is working, we need to look at it and we need to build on it. The consultative group for international agriculture, the CGIAR, has about more than 65 donors. It's $500 million per year, and about 15 centers, which is embedded into the developing countries, as well as one is in Washington, but the rest are in the developing world. And the donors, maybe half of the donors are from developing countries, the other half is from advanced countries, and they work now in mega research program. It's center of excellence. They work with scientists, not only from these centers, but with scientists from the advanced research institution around the world. Maybe this is a model which we can build on, interlinking the network or network of the networks will be very important for us to cut time short if we are going to face the problems we have now in the world even faster than ever. Time of an essence. Thank you.
Thank you. No, I think that's looking at the lessons learned even from some of these are important. Stefan, you guys have done a lot of thinking about this. So.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Stefan Michalowski from the OECD Global Science Forum. Let me just quickly agree with the gentleman who just spoke and also with Linda Staley. There are many models like CGIAR, like Human Genome, and there are many others of distributed research programs, international programs that are worth looking at, very effective. But my comment is about the situation in Europe, because in my experience, what's happened in Europe in science and in science policy has really been extraordinary in the last 10, 15 years, and it is not reflected by the 7% direct research funding that goes through Brussels. That's for two reasons. One is that a lot of that 7%, small amounts of it, are used to fund workshops, coordinate activities, mobility programs that then leverage national funding and are extremely effective for planning, for road mapping, for coordination. A lot of that money has been spent very wisely and results in research that is better and is not reflected by pure number. And the other is that 7% does not include CERN, ESO, ESA, EMBL, ESRF, ILL. You know, there's a whole alphabet soup of European programs that have separate funding and that are, some of them are world class. Some of them are the best in the world right now. So what's happened in Europe, I think, is really extraordinary and it changes the panorama that's been painted. Thank you.
Do you want to comment on either of those, Alan?
I just wanted to make one quick comment, which is a part of what we need in developing this global community notion is, although the model of Europe is a good example, Europe has the advantage of at least apparently working together. The kind of concept that some of us are trying to promote is bringing the emerging scientific communities from the developing world, from China, from India, better into the global enterprise. And there is no structure analogous to the European Union or the European Commission through which we can do that. And the organizations that do exist don't seem to be able, frankly, to do it.
Anybody else have any comments here? I think that we're going to have to. Okay, if it's very, yeah, that's right, I'm sorry.
Jan Kosterduk, Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. I think one of the biggest challenges of creating global funds is the balance between excellence and really driving collaboration. I mean, if you look at the United States, 80% of the federal funds goes to, 50 institutions. European Union, this is a continuous problem, balancing how to support excellence and at the same time create an environment that really stimulates the development across Europe. And the more we drive this on a global scale, I think this is becoming more and more of a challenge. So I think we have to look at other mechanisms than just putting in money. And human capital, like in the Marie Curie project, I think is one of the ways to do this. But you really have to look at other ways to do this.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to end, that it's a complicated question and a complicated issue. Tomorrow, if you want to...
small comments. The United States and European community as well as Japan is now promoting the science of science policy. Mm-hmm. But we need science of global science policy. So at the initial phase, every international program, he mentioned the... get together and the mapping and the global, we should map the each program, international program, based upon the science of global science policy. That might.
Thank you so much. I think a good place to end, because I've only had 2,000 calories to eat today and we're coming up against lunch. So. Thank you so much. I hope we can continue this conversation here, but I do want to say that I think one of the things that's really come out of this World Science Forum in the years past is this question that first is, how do we facilitate international collaborations, but then the next level of the underpinnings of it. How do you actually deal with the coherence and compatibility of a system that is nationalistic, that is field-specific, that is very driven by other things, and how do we actually identify where those priorities and where those norms and standards might be better, maybe better coherent. So thank you so much, and enjoy more food.